Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. Know, O honored guest, that far from being mere literary relics from a bygone age, the heroic tales that first emerged in ancient times, in and around the Mediterranean Sea, are alive and well today. Indeed, they are thriving in the modern world. The Olympic Games, instituted by the Hercules of Thebes to honor the 12 immortals, are now celebrated worldwide. Transpersonal psychologists have taught us how to detect and interact with the Greek gods that reside within our very own psyches. And tale tellers, using media undreamed of by our ancestors, still recount the past, present, and future exploits of Hellenic deities, demigods, heroes, and fabulous beasts. Now, my friend, release hold of your current reality. Relax and enter the realm of timeless tales. Welcome to Mythic Gaming. I am Hercules Invictus, your host. Before we proceed with the program, there is something I'd like to share with you very quickly. For those who'd like to begin adventuring in the exciting world of Greek mythology without any delay, I highly recommend checking out Mazes and Minotaurs online. M&M is a role-playing game set in Mythica, a fictional world inspired by Greek mythology, Hellenic literature, and modern-day mythical entertainment. The system is simple, a pleasure to use, and extremely adaptable. All you need is a basic understanding of the rules, a handful of friends, and some dice to start adventuring in Mythic Greece. Mazes and Minotaurs comes in two versions. The classic version is retro and conjures up the feel of old-style gaming from the halcyon days of the hobby's dawn. The revised version is perfect for modern players and is continuously being tweaked and expanded. Everything you need to play M&M is available online for free, including epic adventures, maps, a supportive community, and the opportunity to help create future gaming materials. By the beard of Zeus, how can you top that? That is part of what we'll be exploring on tonight's show. Greetings and welcome, Tim and Zach. How are you?
Greetings. Hello. Yourself. Good evening. How are you?
I'm okay. Very glad that we did not get the horrible storms and snow that they were promising for today.
Yeah, I don't think we need any more snow over here.
No, it took me several days to clear it off last time, so I'm not looking forward to any more shoveling.
Yeah, so no more for me, thanks.
What is new and exciting with you?
New and exciting with me? Not too much. Just been playing a few games here and there, and just trying to stay busy. The store has been crazy busy still, which has been a nice treat. So just staying busy at the store. You know, that's pretty much what we've been doing.
It seems like every time we blink, there's a new Magic set coming out. So what has come out most recently for Magic the Gathering?
Ain't that the truth. The last one that came out actually fits right in perfectly. It's called Kaldheim, and it's, Norse themed. It has, theming with Norse, and the art and stuff is very Norse themed. They actually hired some consultants so that they were, as relatively true and respectful as they could be, and it turned out really well. I have some of the cards put off to the side for you with some cool art that you would like.
Oh, awesome. Can't wait to see them. And Assassin's Creed has or is coming out very shortly with a Norse mythical game as well. So that's really great that they're coming out together. You get your fill of Norse mythology.
Yeah, yep. Assassin's Creed Valhalla. It came out I think with the launch of the PS5, so not that long ago. And everybody that I talk to says you have to play it. Like, there's no question. I think perfectly fits for you. And with the gameplay changes of Assassin's Creed, I want to jump back in because they changed a bunch of the mechanics and everything with the with that Egyptian one, I think, that you're familiar with.
Yes. Yes, I'm familiar.
Yeah, Yeah, they changed gameplay mechanics and stuff with that release, so I want to give the quote-unquote new style a try.
So the PlayStation 5 is now available. Last time we spoke, there were some delays or problems with getting the PlayStation 5 to people.
Yeah, it's it released. It's still really hard for a bunch of people to not get for a bunch of people to be able to get one.
And how? What are the differences between the PlayStation 4 and the PlayStation 5? Because in the PlayStation 4, it actually is back to the PlayStation 3. The cinematics look cinematic. So, how much more real can they get?
Right. Yeah. No. That's what I always say. Like, how much better can it look? But it does get better and better with every year. You know.
Wow.
The controller is nice. They did a couple new changes with the controller. So you get that aspect to it. It's just a more powerful console. The normal iterations that they do every however many years for new consoles.
And any other games or consoles, any other card games coming out around this time as well?
Yeah, actually. The new, I don't know if you remember back in the day, Digimon was... It was a an anime and also a card game and other ancillary products, but they redid the Digimon card game. So that they did like an early release thing a couple months ago, but that officially came out this past week, and that has been crazy as well. The whole trading card game boom of the past year hit Digimon as well. So. Product is hard to get and it's expensive, but it's a really cool product and the game seems really cool. So hopefully they have the the support to keep it going through all of this.
Yes, games are getting expensive again. For a while it looked like they were getting more or less expensive, and now it seems that everything's going up in price again.
Yeah, I think the the pandemic and everybody staying home looking for stuff to do at home has caused a boom in a lot of the trading card game community and the retro game community and just video games in general have gotten even more popular than they already were starting to get. Especially now, like I said, with everybody kind of forced to stay home.
Wow, okay, well, I'm really happy for you. That's a great thing for Level 1 Games and for you. So I'm really, really happy that things are unfolding in this way. And I'm sure that this pandemic's going to change our gaming habits forever.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's definitely going to be shifts in the way people play or the way games are made or even, whole mechanics based around not being able to be with the same person in the room with you.
And yes, you've shared many times with long distance gaming has become the thing now. And even though some people have done it before, now it seems like that's the way to play. If you want to get together with friends and do a role playing game, that getting together online is what you do and how you do it.
Right.
And Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well. Not too much new on this end. Got a couple new board games I can talk about a bit later in the episode if you'd like. Otherwise,
sure.
We've just been hanging out at home and, as you said, shoveling the snow for days on end.
I've integrated it into my workout. So, it's like shoulders and back and lower back and abdominals and arms, so I switch my focus on what I'm doing to make sure that I evenly distribute the stress to different areas of my body. So, try to make, life gives you lemons, you make lemonade.
Yeah, it's a good way to look at it.
I've been enjoying
it. It really puts to work muscles that you forgot that you even had.
Yes. Well, it contributed to my changing my workout around, too, because I've been using the X3, which is a product to exercise. I was pretty happy with it, but my workouts were starting to get a little stale. So with the shoveling snow, I got inspired to shake up my workout a bit. So it actually worked out for the best because the shoveling exercise I was getting really felt good. So I went back to, I still am doing the core of the X3, but I've integrated like dumbbells and kettlebells and D-bells and other cables and game exercise toys and things like that, like those spring twisters and all sorts of stuff into my routine. So it actually worked out for the best. So, Zach, what type of board games did you come across?
Okay, I got, I think, two new ones since the last time we talked. Alien Frontiers has been on my list for several years. I first played it through my aunt and uncle at one of their board game nights. Uh-huh. It's got a very cool art style reminiscent of, like, the old classic sci-fi novels. And then, as a homage even further, the planet that you're focusing on has regions named after famous sci-fi novelists. So, like, there's the Asimov Plains and the Heinlein Mountains and stuff like that. And so it's a really cool treat in that aspect. But then the gameplay is really interesting. The idea is you're all fighting to colonize a planet, and it's divided up into these different regions. Each region will give whoever controls it a different benefit. So, for example, if you control the mountains, it might give you an extra die every turn. Or if you control planes, it might make one of the options on the board cheaper for you to use or get you a bigger benefit for doing so. The core mechanic is that you start with three ships, but your ships are represented by D6. Every turn you roll your D6, and then you assign them to spots on the board based off of the numbers you roll. As you go through the game, you can craft new ships, increasing you up to six D6 at a time. And you will also be losing them because one of the ways you can get colonies onto the planet is by crash landing a ship to make a colony. So
okay.
It's a very interesting dynamic with the way you use your dice that I haven't really seen used in other games. It's been a very good time. I will send you a link to it afterwards if you'd like, so you can check out the art and everything.
Oh, definitely. I'd be interested in checking it out. So that sounds like a lot of fun, and it fits right in with a quirky type of gaming that your aunt seems to like producing with her company.
Yeah. I've played it with them several times because they really enjoy it.
And the other game?
What is that other game that we've played that has the cool, like, you know, like Hammer film style art, the card games?
Can't be creatures.
Yeah, Can't Be Creatures. I'm picturing that kind of art. Is it that style or?
Kind of, yeah, yeah. That's a good comparison. Like,
okay.
I'll send it to both of you, but like, it definitely in that vibe of old school sci-fi. So like, there's cards with different technologies on them, and the rocket ships look like the kind of rocket ships you might have seen on like old sci-fi pulp magazines from like the 50s, you know, like the very like sleek shape with the bright primary colors and everything like that.
Okay. Nice.
I love those types of science fiction. Today I was looking through my old DVDs and I found these collections I had that have like 50 movies in them. So I have like four different boxes of science fiction ones. And of course, they're duplicated, so you're not getting like totally different movies. Some are the same, and some they're in different categories as well as being horror. But I love those films, and my wife likes the universal horror, the classic Dracula and Frankenstein, the Creature from the Black Lagoon, and the werewolf, and so forth. So the cards, the campy cards, how is that played?
Tim, would you like to take that one?
Yeah, sure. So I'll try my best to try to describe it. It's, you start with your hand of 1 to 8 cards, and they all have different, old style, quote unquote, monsters on them. And they each have, different, you know, powers and stuff as you play. Basically, it's just about trying to capture the most, what do they call them? They don't call them students. They call them...
It's not victims. It's something like that, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like the typical, like the teenagers in distress, or, you know, the scientist, and this guy's the cop and stuff like that, like the tropes for these old school movies.
Uh-huh.
Right. The archaeologist, and I'm trying to find a picture of it.
It looks like they might just call them mortals.
Yeah, mortals.
Yeah, because you're monsters capturing mortals, yeah.
But it's just about playing the highest number card and getting the mortals with the higher number cards. But each card does, you know, kind of different things. You got the werewolf, where as you play it, it forces somebody to discard a card. So the cards that you play are face up, so you can tell, you know, oh, Zach played his six, which is the vampire, you know, so I know he won't be playing the six this turn, so where will he be? So I need to be higher than him, maybe, or I need to be lower than him, but give him an effect that might mess him up in later turns. It's just it's a super fun, quick game that's just card-based, and the art, like we were talking about, that's what Zach originally told me about. He's like, you might like this game just for nothing, just for the art. And we ended up getting it, and it ended up being a fun game.
It sounds like it's fun, and that it's easy to learn as well. So it's basically you're comparing in the highest number wins, and I'm assuming you can modify that number with items or things during the game.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. But there'll be different powers that might shut off, you know. Zach plays something that shuts off my power, which, you know, would normally, you know, make me have a better benefit or something. So there's strategy there, but there's still, you know, luck to it.
It's an interesting element because everyone has the same exact hand of cards. So
okay.
You know every option that every other player has. It's just when will they use those options?
So everyone's, like, let's say everyone's suit is exactly the same, like in the regular deck of cards. So they're starting with a range of identical cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's the card numbers. It is 1 to 8, I think, right, Tim?
0 to 8. 0 is the blob.
0 to 8. That's right, because the blob can copy things. But
yep.
So the idea is we're each given the same exact hand of cards. They just have a different colored back to show which character has them, then they lay out up to 6 mortals on the table, and the idea is that each one's worth a different number of points. So there might be a card that has 2 teenagers on it, or there might be a card that just has 1 archaeologist. Some of them have extra effects, which they'll talk about. Some of them are negative points, so I think one of them is like the hunter, who is the person who hunts down the monster, and you don't want that one, so you want to try and force other people to get it. But then what you do is, after you see what's in the market, you choose one of the cards from your hand to play face down. Once everyone's done that, you reveal. And then the highest number gets to choose the first card from the market. So it's
okay.
Not that you're winning a trick. It's just giving you first bid on what to take.
That's very creative. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's a fun mechanic. And like I said, I always love games where everyone has the same exact stuff, so you have to really think carefully about what you're going to do.
And this sounds like it definitely fits the bill. And you mentioned another board game as well?
Yes. So I was looking for things for me and Jamie to play because, you know, I have some 2-player games, and I have some games that will play as low as 2, but I don't have too many that are just for 2 players, that kind of thing. And I wanted to play a legacy game because we haven't done one of those in a while. And I think before this game, I've only actually ever completed 1 legacy game.
Okay.
So I found one called My City. It's by Cosmos. And the basic idea is kind of like Tetris. So you get a grid, the exact same grid as every other player. And there's an open plain, a mountain on the left, some forest on the right, and the river goes right down the middle. It's divided up into squares on a grid system, and each turn you flip over one card from a deck. Whatever piece is shown on there, it'll show you a shape and color, is the piece that you then have to place onto the board. At the start of the game, your first piece has to touch the river, but then every other piece you play has to touch a pre-existing piece. You can never like block the river. You can have a piece touching on either side of it, but you can't cover the river by like crossing it with one piece. You can't put things on the mountains, and you can't build on the trees. So at the start of the game, it's very simple. You both only have, I think, maybe 16 pieces that you can play, and you're always playing the same exact pieces, but you're building in different ways. But what the game does is it has two versions. They have what they call the Eternal game, which is the backside of the boards. And that game you can play over and over again with anyone, any number of players, whatever. But the meat of the game is the Legacy variant. So on that side of the board, a lot of the space at first is like blank trimming around the grid that you're building on. And over the course of the game, there are 8 envelopes that you're opening up. Each envelope contains stickers, new pieces, rules, and scoring charts for 3 games. So over the course of the whole board game box, you're playing 24 games in the Legacy game. The idea is that each envelope will introduce between 1 to 3 new mechanics that will change the way you've been playing the game, give you new options to score, give you new ways to avoid losing points, and similar things like that. What they do to make things even more interesting is that every game, when you score, usually whoever takes first place also gets some form of punishment. So, for example, if I won first place, I might get to color in 2 of the victory points towards the tally that we'll see who has the most at the end of all 24 games. But it might also tell me to add a sticker of rocks onto my board. And rocks are bad because if you don't cover them up, if they're visible at the end of a game, they lose you points for the number of rocks that are visible. Okay. So it gives you a kind of drawback so that hopefully people who are behind can start catching up. And vice versa, if you don't come in first place, usually you get to add some sort of beneficial sticker. So maybe you get to add trees to your board. Trees are the opposite of rocks. They're positive points if they're visible at the end of the game. Or maybe it lets you enhance one of the tiles that you have. Or you can remove something bad on your board. So it's got a very nice balancing mechanic. And Jamie and I played through all 24 games.
Wow.
I would say until game 18 or 19, we were very much neck and neck. So it seemed very well balanced. After that point, we started to pull away from each other in score terms. But a lot of the mechanics were really fun. I don't really want to talk about them too much to spoil if people do want to play the Legacy version. The envelopes changing the game state was a very nice touch. It seemed like each one added something that was new, exciting, and totally made you change the way you've been playing. I think it was about halfway through the game, we had a rules change that it blew our minds, and there was an integral scoring mechanic that we had had since the first envelope that then went away entirely. And so we've been playing the whole game up until that point, focusing on doing that to get points. And then the game's like, yep, that's gone. There's new mechanics. That one does not work anymore. And so you have to sit there and totally rethink the way you play the game.
Well, that is awesome. And the fact that games have evolved to the point where, they do provide something a lot more interactive and a lot more changeable is awesome.
Yeah, I would highly recommend this one. It was also fairly cheap. I got it at Barnes & Noble for $35, and I easily could have seen paid like $50-$60 for this.
Wow.
What was the name of it?
It's called My City.
Cool. I just want to put it up
on the screen. At some point, Tim, we can play the non-Legacy version, because like I said, that's the really nice thing about it. Is a lot of Legacy games are kind of a one and done. Once you finish the campaign, there's not too much you can do, if anything. This gives you the option of always being able to replay it with everyone having the same, like starting. You basically
I think it's you function as if you were halfway through the legacy game. So some of the mechanics that were introduced there are used, but you can just play it over and over again that way. And since we did it two-player, we only used half of the stickers and everything like that. We have the option of continuing and doing another two-player campaign if we want on the other two-player boards.
As other characters. Yeah, that's interesting. And you can't, use all this material to create your own scenarios. I know you had said in previous podcasts that some of them publish, like, the next chapter or the next bunch of chapters or continuation or an expansion. So isn't there something in place where if you use your dungeon mastering skills and some creativity, you can generate new scenarios in these legacy games?
With a game like this, I don't know if you could, just because it's so focused on the scoring mechanics changing and everything. What
okay.
I can see you're doing is, because you're building a city, you're building a location, you could use that as inspiration to make a location for an RPG, perhaps, especially at different points of the game. You know, the whole idea is that you're playing the same person who founded the city, and you're slowly, like, you move from medieval age to the industrialization age and a little bit beyond that. So I could totally see that as a world-building tool, like, you know, naming the city, seeing the layout, and then kind of following it through time. But as the game itself, there's not too much you could do after completing the campaign to change that.
I know in older games, like, for instance, Talisman, if you kind of, like, took the Talisman game and then you took, like, mechanics from Fighting Fantasy, which were similar to Talisman, you could start incorporating all that stuff, you know, into one bigger adventure. So the board becomes then like a map for role play. And Talisman had a habit of creating separate boards for, like, a space on the main board or expansion boards. And you could literally not interact with the other players. You could just go off and do your thing. So it provided a mechanism for incorporating those type of things into, like, a role-playing game. So if somebody wanted to go off, they could either go to the Talisman board or they can go to one of the game books. And with slight modifications in their stats and in the system of resolving a situation, they could pretty much, you know, have their own adventures and then integrate back into the role play later on. So I'm really fascinated by these legacy games, and I'm trying to figure out how something that would add, like, a new dimension to the weird form of gameplay that I ascribe to.
I have heard so many good things about Talisman. I have never gotten the chance to play it.
Oh, it is. When the pandemic passes, we'll have to get together and play Talisman. My wife doesn't like it, so we don't really play it anymore. But for many, many years, I used to play Talisman continuously. And Talisman is something you can play by yourself also. Just get bored with the decks, and you can wander around and have adventures. So there's always that. Tim, have you also looked into Artifact?
The amount that I looked into it was whatever Zach sent me when he originally was talking about it, and then whatever was discussed last time that we. That we talked.
Yeah, I had a late start. I got remarkably busy, and then my printer died, and it made it difficult for me to, focus on the reading. But I started reading, and then my printer got mysteriously fixed, so I was able to print out some of the pages, and that made everything a lot easier. And I didn't finish my part. But it's like maybe half finished, and then I came up with a few twists. So I know where I'm going to end this, and I'll have to go back and polish up what I wrote. And in fact, I have a slightly more polished version of what I sent Zach earlier. But this is a fascinating way of giving the items in a role-playing game a history. So you can – it's it's very similar to a game, like the games that were played when we were kids, where we would say a sentence or a paragraph, and then the next person had to add to it, and then the other person had to add to it. So it's kind of like that in its mechanic. And then there was a game called Once Upon a Time that was also very similar, except that you had cards, and you played the cards to interrupt somebody's narrative and then interject the cards that you had. So this was kind of like the same thing. You start, you after the rules, you have like a bunch of templates, and then somebody starts telling the story, and then the next person gets it, and then the next person gets it. And I can see this becoming like an epic background to a magic item that would really enhance anybody's campaign.
Yeah, it seems like a really cool thing, like you said, to be able to come up with a weapon that might be used in a campaign, you know, later on, and it, you know, pulls pieces from every little, from all the people that are participating. It's a cool way to come up with characters or weapons. That's what I've gathered from it.
Yeah, and you don't even have to introduce these things into the campaign right away. You could kind of put them on ice for a while and then make some minor cosmetic changes to the item and throw it into a campaign later on, where they would start recognizing it after a while, but that would be like a new chapter in the adventures of this particular item. And then the amount of years that pass would match, you know, whatever the new period that it awakens in is.
Right.
But I had a lot of fun doing it. Zach, I'm going to hand the baton to you on this because you're the expert at it and you're the moderator of it. Onwards. We'll start at the beginning.
Okay. So this piece was written by the first player, Kyle Brown. He created the item. He also, we don't, obviously, it's not audio, so we can't show it. But he created an image of the sigil that was on the shield. Which, let me get that open. I don't have the picture open, but I'd like to describe that so people have some idea. So it's a silver diamond with a lotus leaf that looks slightly wilted emblazoned in the center of it. So that's the emblem for our shield for this game, and over the course of the game, we will be able to make changes to the way that looks as well as to the narrative of the shield. At the beginning of the game, Kyle had to come up with how the shield was created, and three major defining traits. Over the course of the game, these traits can be added, removed, or changed after each player's section as time moves forward. So the traits for the shield initially are dancing, giant, and pretentious. And here is the origin story for our as-yet-unnamed shield. My eldest memories are forge and fire in fane and dancing, rhythmic blow of bellows to set the time, the harsh clatter of tongs, a partner spinning me this way and that, melodic drum of hammer beating strong on anvil, rising, falling, building to an inexorable crescendo, then the soothing rush of quench to mark the close of one hymn and a short rest before the next. An altar formed to bear a bed of coal, sustaining passion, ecstasy, and flame, upon whose blackened face my sacrifice transpired, prominently stands at the heart of holy shrine, a place of paradise for smith and shield alike. Beneath the moon and stars, the frigid wind exhumes a floor of polished stone and carries in the strain of brash voices replete through bazaars below. A maiden's lozenge, giant's hands with grace and skill produced. The lady's mark adorns my face. A single valley lily sprouts upon a field of gray. Along my edge run runes of power, charm, and strength. Redoubt for those in need, and safety near for those who hold my favor. Fanfare ushers forth my coming. With cheer, all who see me born rejoice, revel, and take heart. Salvation comes.
Awesome. That was very inspiring. You read it phenomenally well.
Thank you.
And the traits that were involved there were dancing, giant, and pretentious again. I played with this, and then all of a sudden it hit me. I saw the beginning and the end of it, and I wrote a little bit more than half. It's already almost as long as what you read. Onward. A decade later, their dance feeds me, revitalizes me, as do their many offerings. I now have a name and a purpose. There are rituals and observances, priests and priestesses. I have awoken and my mind is clear. In between their celebratory events and ceremonies, I sleep, reliving my memories and weaving the content of their many songs and stories into my greater legend. Earth's blessing I am, my strength deceptively represented by a delicate flower, a flower that blossoms against all odds in the frozen north. Though an artifact of legend, I'm not the original shield, which was destroyed in the Troll Wars, where Borea the Bold single-handedly kept the mountain trolls at bay at Steno Pass, until other Hyperborean warriors arrived and the day was won. Hyperborea survived, rejoiced, and remembered. My current vessel is new, as will be the incarnation of my wielder. I await the hero, the one who is expected in times of crisis, the one who returns. Thus far, none of the revelers, nor any of the pretenders who claim to be the one, have resonated with my forger's intent, my people's need, or the many tales that I have been told. I reject them, giving signs my people can understand. The pretenders, I cursed for their hubris. I hate the pretenders. So that's where I'm up to, and the rest of it is just random words and sentences that I'll eventually forge into the rest of this story. But it really surprised me when the story took hold of me. It really started to unfold, and it's like, yeah, this is cool. You know, let me do that with it. And then it's just going to be a matter of going back and polishing it up, you know, where the wording is rough. But I'm enjoying this, and I could already see how I can use this in something that I'm doing.
I'm really glad you're having a good time with it. I'm excited to see the rest of what you do with the story.
You will have it hopefully by week's end by email and PM. And then it goes to another individual whose email I have. So I will send it to you first because, again, I've never done anything like this before, even though I've done similar things. So I just want to make sure that I'm giving them something complete that they can work with in accordance with the rules.
Yep, sounds perfect.
And this, too, looking over the directions, you can make modifications to this as well. You know, you could create a rule that it takes place within the history of a particular empire or a particular planet and shorten the duration of time that passes between each awakening. And it reminds me of a book I'd read a long time ago. I don't remember who wrote it, but it was called Grey Maiden. And it was about a sword, and it followed the sword's adventures. And there, too, between the chapters, different amounts of time had passed, sometimes a little bit of time and sometimes a lot. The sword, it chronicled its journey from creation to destruction. So this reminded me of that a great deal.
Now I'm going to look that book up.
Wow. I'm looking forward to the next adventure. One of our other hosts, Nicholas Dyack, he's an author, and he's written lots of anthologies and a lot of he's also edited a lot of anthologies. So he had suggested an outer space Greek mythology game. He had gotten a rule set called Hellas of Swords and Sandals. And I've had a chance to check that out. I don't have all the books, but I have a couple of them. So we'll probably do something like I did on Facebook a few years ago. So I'll invite you guys to play that as well.
Looking forward to it.
My appetite has been wet because of this pandemic. Again, options are kind of limited, and a lot of things I used to do are just not happening during the course of the pandemic. So I'm looking for new things to do. And one of the invitations I've gotten repeatedly over the past decade that I never really had a chance to follow through with is game design. And one of those doors is closed because the person who extended the invitation, they died not too long ago. So that particular door is closed, but there are several others that remain open. So my conversations with both of you have gotten the creative juices flowing and expanding my mind into different possibilities. I don't think I could create something like one of those legacy games that you shared. And I certainly can't create anything electronic beyond like a play by email game on Facebook. But in terms of other types of games, you know, I played enough of them and I'm learning a lot from both of you. So I'll probably take my stab at that, and I'll need play testers at some point. So I will extend the invitation to you.
Well, absolutely. Always up for playtesting.
And I'm thinking, since I'm basically focused on mythology, it would be mythical with some sword and sorcery elements thrown in, because I really love sword and sorcery as well as sword and sandal, and also science fiction. I don't know if it'll go full into the science fiction, or whether there will have been a lost civilization like Atlantis, that like in the Lost in Atlantis, where there are artifacts that somebody can find and raid. So I'm still playing with those, but that'll probably be where the game is set.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Like I said, I'm always up for play testing. And but my first experience was when we were at Zach's aunt and uncle's, and then my other experience was the thing that Zach has been working on too. So I'm always willing.
The Pokemon one, that, how is that coming along? I was going to ask about that.
The other board game that he's been working on.
Oh, awesome.
We touched on it briefly. It was the idea is two players fight together as one unit against an opposing force comprised of one player. And the main mechanic is that the two players on a team are controlling one creature, but it has two minds. So the problem is they have the same exact hand of cards, kind of like that Can't Be Creatures game we mentioned earlier. And they choose a card, put it face down, and flip it face up. If they match cards, they double the effect of whatever they were trying to do. So if they were attacking melee or generating movement points, they would double whatever they were supposed to. But if they didn't match, they then have to choose one of the two cards to resolve instead. Every time they match, they go up on a meter. So as the meter increases, before they choose what they're playing for the turn, they can take up to three cards in their hand, depending how high they are on the meter, and say, I'm not playing this one, and put it face up on the table. So that way their partner has an idea, okay, Jamie's not playing melee attack this round, so if I play that, we're definitely not going to double on it. So if she's not playing that, she must be playing one of these cards instead, and it helps you narrow down your options to try and either move in sync with them to double the effect, or to instead play a card that they didn't choose to play so that you hopefully have options.
Wow. I like the fact that the enemy has different minds controlled by different people, because you don't know what it's going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been interesting. That, like Zach's explained, that there's mechanics that are similar but not put together the way that he has. So they're familiar enough where people that have played board games before, they understand the base mechanics of it. But, you know, put together, it's a totally different experience than I've ever seen.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I'm looking forward to learning more as it continues to evolve, and I'll be sharing more as my things continue to evolve as well. Do either of you have a history with, like, choose your own path books?
I used to
only
read a bunch
as much
I
as
younger.
I did in the '90s. But that's
okay.
It.
Yeah, that's 90s, early 2000s.
Back in the day, I guess it was like in the early 70s, no, late 70s, early 80s, around that time, it was very difficult to get people to play any type of role-playing game, and role-playing games were in their infancy. So if you stuck with the plan, it was basically you create a dungeon, you have a bunch of random rooms with random monsters, and they're guarding random items, and then you have traps, and you know that it was kind of like what you were doing. And there were several different systems, and one of those systems was Tunnels and Trolls, which actually in some parts of the world came out before Dungeons and Dragons. So it was either the first or the second role-playing game system to come out. And they knew that it was difficult to get people together, so what they started doing was they started publishing what they called solo dungeons. And that was the first pick-your-path type of book. So it followed the rules for the game, and then they would let you know what level characters you brought in. And then, you can adventure on your own, and then you can bring the items into your game when you got players together, and, you know, with the DM's approval, of course. But that's kind of like how they did it. And then later on, they had a computer game, and they fleshed out the world. Then they put all their solitaire dungeons where they belong in terms of this bigger map and a greater timeline. So I experimented a great deal because I didn't have a lot of people to play with back then either. So the solo dungeons were a way of gaming. And I explored what other companies were doing, and I found some were, well-written, like the Fighting Fantasy ones were always a treat, and then some not so much, you know, and some of them were geared towards small children, so they weren't very much interest to me in terms of my gaming. But I was wondering, I really haven't a chance to check into what that aspect of the hobby was doing. So from what both of you have told me, this is not something that's thriving at this particular point in time.
The thing that I've seen, and I forget the actual brand name of it, but it's the one of the most classic Choose Your Own Adventures. They came out with a card/board game that I picked up that was relatively cheap. And we played through a couple scenarios of it, but it's just a Choose Your Own Adventure book, but in a card game where you draw, you know, a few cards and it has scenarios, and you play out the scenarios, and there's an A or B choice, and the table makes a decision and say, okay, I choose A choice, and if you do, you follow the instructions and says, you know, take card 13, and you go from there, and you play through the quote-unquote book, but it's just a board game. It was fun when we were playing it. We've managed to play through a couple scenarios.
And do you remember what it was called?
Let's see. I'm at my computer now. Let's see. It's just one of the the Choose Your Own Adventure book. Choose Your Own Adventure is the name of it. But House of Danger is the one that particular. Yeah.
I've seen those. There's at least two of them that I know of. One of them is with outer space, and the other one's like the haunted house or something, I believe.
Yeah, the House of Danger. That's the one. That's the one that we had. I kind of remember that you come across a mansion, and I think we entered a greenhouse, maybe, Zach, if I'm remembering that correctly.
I think that's about where it ended, because I think it was. The first chapter was us trying to find a way into the actual mansion because we were in like the hedge maze and the outside. And then
right.
I think it ended with us getting into the greenhouse.
Yeah.
I have to check that out. I think I've seen that in Target. I believe I saw it.
Yeah. I think it's $25 or something like that. It's definitely worth it to, The card quality is nice. The box is nice. You know, it looks just like the book. They did a good job with it.
And Target occasionally has buy two get one free or buy one get one free. So there's always game sales, so I'll just keep my eyes aware of that in the post.
It's worth for the nostalgia.
Oh, definitely. I used to love those books, and I used to have the original ones, some of them. So I was wondering whether I should check that out or not, but you make it sound enticing, so I'm definitely going to try it out. We're down to the last 10 minutes, so I guess we'll start looking at the future a little bit. What can we expect at Level 1 Games in the month ahead?
So we're still going to be pretty busy with a bunch of new product that's coming out. Luckily, we're in a little bit of a, you know, of a relaxed time, but Magic likes to throw out, you know, like little ancillary sets in between, like their main standard sets. I'm not sure exactly what it is. There was an old set called the Time Spiral that was released maybe 10 years ago, maybe more, where it kind of, you know, flipped Magic around a little bit, changed, you know, some color pie mechanics, you know, just to spice things up, if you will. So they're doing Time Spiral Remastered. That's all they really said about it.
Okay.
So we're still waiting for spoiler season for that. That should be, you know, probably within a month or so. And then the next main set after that, Zach, something that you might be interested in is, I forget the full name of it, but it's very clearly inspired by Harry Potter.
Okay.
I'll get you the name. I'll get you the name of it. It's called Strixhaven School of Mages. So they said that it takes place, you know, there's some schools that, you know, have different types of magic and stuff. So this is the most elite magical university in the multiverse. And it consists of these five colleges with their own takes on magic. So it's pretty close to the Harry Potter, I would think.
Yes.
Yeah, it sounds like that's what they're going
for. Right. So I'm hoping that, like, what they did with Ikoria that released a couple months ago, or actually right at the beginning of the pandemic, actually, so nearly a year ago, they did a crossover with the Godzilla cards. So they do crossovers like that, so I wonder if they could somehow work something in with Harry Potter. I'm not sure if that would fly, you know, with copyright and stuff, but I'm sure that's what lawyers are for, and they figured all that out. But it would be a cool thing to, you know, it would be a cool crossover, because they did The Walking Dead and, like I said, Godzilla and a few other things they've done in the past too. So it's not, you know, it's not in the realm of impossibility. So those are coming out, and then as well as some Pokemon stuff that's been super crazy, but still staying busy, and a bunch of stuff still happening.
Are people able to come into the store to play, or just limited, like a handful of people at a time at this point?
Still no in-store play. It's still suspended, you know, through Wizards of the Coast and Pokemon. So no word on that yet, but, you know, hopefully now with the vaccine and everything, and hopefully people, you know, start doing what they have to do, and we can be back to somewhat normal, you know, that term that we hear all the time. But hopefully it's sooner than later, and we can get back to in-store events where we can start playing Magic and having D&D and board game night again.
May that be so. May it happen very quickly. And Zach, how about with you? What do you see in the months ahead?
One thing I'm excited for is several of the Kickstarters that I backed last year should be shipping out hopefully in the next couple months.
Wow.
So there's been several board games and RPGs that I've been waiting to get my physical copies of. Hopefully I should be able to get them and give you reviews on them in the upcoming 3 or 4 months or so.
That is incredible. So it takes like years sometimes for something to come out?
It depends on what the product is. And obviously, last year was a bit of an aberration, so that slowed things down quite a bit. But there's a couple. I think the longest one I'm waiting on now is about 3 years, but that's for a hand-carved wooden dice tower that is like it's magnetically pull apart and portable and stuff like that. So that's not a game, but that's the thing I've been waiting for at this point about 3 years for.
Wow.
Most of the other ones, it's been about a year to 6 months, give or take. Board games and usually have a fairly quick turnaround.
And how can folks contact you and enter your world?
You can always email me at Mr. Moonin, MRMUNNIN, at gmail.com, or search me up on Facebook.
One of Odin's ravens.
Yes.
And Tim,
coincidentally, my cat is named Odin.
Oh, okay. Keep it all in the family.
Yep.
And Tim, how can people contact you?
For me, the best way is going through the store. Just find Level 1 Games on Facebook and Instagram. Send us a message through there. Whenever we get new product and new cool stuff, we take a picture and post it up online there so you can take a look and see. Anything that you're interested in, just send us a message, and more than happy to help you out with any questions as well. We're always there, ready to answer if you need any help.
And I can vouch for the fact that Level 1 Games is an awesome place to visit, and the people there are phenomenal. And unfortunately, with the pandemic, I'm not by as often as I used to be before, and I miss going there. So I'm looking forward to things changing so that I can come by in person again.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And thanks to everybody who's joined us from home, whether you're listening live or later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys, amazing adventures, and cool gaming. Take care. This is Hercules signing out. Be well, guys. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
You too.
Children of fire.